Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast known as Left of Lansing. I am Pat Johnston, and I have to start with this bit of audio because I just relish this type of desperate honesty from MAGA Republicans.
And you put very sexy things like abortion and marijuana on the ballot, and a lot of young people come out and vote. It was a secret sauce for disaster in Ohio. I don't know what they were thinking, but that's why I thank goodness that most of the states in this country don't allow you to put everything on the ballot, because pure democracies are not the way to run a country.
That was former Pennsylvania Christian Nationalist MAGA Senator Rick Santorum on Newsmax this past election night, saying loudly what we've always suspected: the right wing hates democracy. I will say it again, the right wing hates democracy. Now, it's not breaking news. We've always known this to be the case. And why was Santorum lamenting the democratic process, a process which helped him become a United States Senator a few decades ago? Because once again, the Christian nationalist suffered another embarrassing yet eye-opening loss at the polls when it comes to abortion rights. Despite desperate attempts by Ohio's far right-wing Republican Party to take the question of abortion rights out of the hands of the people of Ohio not only prevailed, but they sent shockwaves throughout MAGA land this week. The people pushed back against the Ohio Republicans' draconian six-month abortion ban this week by passing a ballot initiative, Issue 1, with a whopping 57% in support of the measure, which, like here in Michigan, will enshrine abortion rights into Ohio State's constitution. The initiative guarantees the right to abortion up to fetal viability and puts medical decisions in the hands of doctors and patients, and it will take effect 30 days after the election. That's according to the Ohio Capital Journal. Now, the Washington Post provided a demographic breakdown of that Ohio vote, and the numbers are causing lots of nervousness throughout MAGA land, I'm sure. Not only did 92% of people identified as Democratic voters support the proposal, but independents voted for the measure by a 28% margin. Some 93% of voters identified as liberals backed the measure, while those calling themselves moderates voted 2-1 in favor. I mean, that's what led in part to the big win for the abortion rights side in Ohio. Even more, and this really caught my eye, 71% of Ohio voters who said they were not evangelicals supported the measure. 71%. Again, this happened despite MAGA Republicans doing everything in their power to tip the scales in their favor. Politico's Alice Miranda Olstein reported that Secretary of State and Senate hopeful Frank LaRose also crafted a ballot summary that abortion rights supporters decried as biased and misleading, including changing the word fetus to unborn child and removing references to protections for non-abortion services like contraception and fertility treatments. LaRose also spearheaded the August failed special election that would have made it more difficult to amend the state constitution, and his office purged tens of thousands of inactive voters from the rolls after early voting for the November election was already underway and the deadline to re-register had passed. You see, they did everything to lie and cheat their way to victory, but we're not surprised by it, are we? I mean, that's the MAGA way. But it wasn't just in Ohio where the white Christian nationalist cult lost. In Virginia, despite the corporate media's glorification of that state's MAGA Republican governor, Greg Youngkin, who desperately tried to get Republicans in control of the state legislature so that he could pass a 15-week abortion ban, despite all of those glorious headlines, what happened to Greg Youngkin and the Republicans there in Virginia? Well, Virginia Democrats retained control of the legislature, thereby blocking any chance of Greg Youngkin passing any bills blocking a woman's right to choose. As feminist writer Jessica Valenti posted on Twitter, Republicans spent tens of millions of dollars, months of political maneuvering, and even held a special election. They still lost. And you know that is causing heads to explode in MAGA land. Here, listen to Fox and Friends' Brian Kilmeade complain how Republicans didn't really do a good enough job scaring voters like they usually do. But his co-host Steve Doocy actually brings up the albatross wrapped around the GOP's necks, and it doesn't appear they'll be able to shake it anytime soon. Listen.
The thing that's important is they didn't message crime. They didn't message the border. They have not touched the inner city. So whatever people are, however the mayors are failing, however the issues are falling short, whether it's the bail reform or whether it's the lack of police officers on the street, nothing was emphasized or matters as much as that, or people are just staying home. Yeah. The Republicans have a lot to work with. They're just not working with it.
Well, but ultimately, it comes down to the Democrats have a really potent issue, and that is abortion, because, you know, ever since Roe v. Wade was overturned, pretty much every time the Democrats have run on abortion, they have won. And here's the bad, you know, and was last night a harbinger for 2024, as you were alluding to, Ainsley? Absolutely. You know why? Because there are opponents and proponents trying to put abortion rights on the ballots in the states of Florida, Nevada, Arizona, and Pennsylvania. So it's going to be, you know, if you're a Republican running in those states, you're going to have a tough 2024.
You see, this was all they're doing. This was all the Republicans doing. MAGA Republicans chose this route. They stole a Supreme Court seat when they refused to allow President Obama the chance to fill Antonin Scalia's seat back in 2016. They blocked it. They embraced Donald Trump because they knew with him they could finally get a right-wing Supreme Court to do what they always wanted, striking down Roe. And by the way, Donald Trump is still celebrating the fact that he was the one who helped bring down Roe. And they thought they'd win electorally once the freedom and protection to choose was ripped away from millions of women across the country. They really did. I mean, they were so stuck inside their little MAGA bubble, they failed to see or anticipate the anger voters would unleash on them at the polls. We saw the exact same thing happen here in Michigan last year when we passed and enshrined abortion rights into our state constitution. The voters, including young voters who showed up in record numbers, made their voices loud and clear to MAGA Republicans. We believe in freedom here. And that's what voters across the country are telling MAGA. Keep the government out of a woman's medical relationship with her doctor. Keep the government out of it. Ashley Fennessy of Michigan Planned Parenthood Advocates and friend of the podcast posted on X that when voters have a voice, they choose reproductive freedom every time. And she also posted, P.S., lying to voters and trying to hide or dress up your anti-abortion agenda doesn't work. Voters are not stupid. They know when politicians are trying to pull one over on them and control their lives. So has the extreme Christian nationalist MAGA movement learned its lesson yet? Think again. The Detroit News' Beth LeBlanc and Craig Mauger reported this week that Right to Life of Michigan is suing to overturn Proposition 3 last year, which cemented abortion rights into the state constitution. The legal argument so-called Right to Lifers are making is quite laughable, saying, and this is according to that Detroit News story, the language approved by voters for inclusion in Michigan's constitution creates a quote-unquote super right to reproductive freedom that conflicts with the First and 14th Amendments of the United States Constitution and with constitutional guarantees to a Republican form of government. And here's a quote from that lawsuit. At no time in our nation's history has such a super right, immune from all legislative action, ever been created by a popular vote outside of the checks and balances of a Republican form of government. So the answer to my question is no, MAGA has not learned its lesson yet. And it's funny, too, because the very Supreme Court they always wanted said the issue of abortion should be set back to the states. Justice Samuel Alito wrote in his opinion, and I'm quoting here, "Our decision returns the issue of abortion to state legislative bodies and allows women to affect the legislative process by lobbying legislators, voting, and running for office. Women are not without electoral or political power." That's what Justice Alito wrote. And guess what, MAGA? You are learning about the political power and the political will women throughout the country have. But when they lose, MAGA, always wants to change the rules. You know that. I know that. They always want to change the rules and overturn the will of the people. Now, when has that ever happened before? This is why we've got to keep vigilant, and we have to keep the pressure on all MAGA Republicans on the issue of abortion rights. They're losing. But guess what? They're not going away. They keep doubling down and doubling down some more. Punishing women for having sex is what drives them. They want to be able to control women, and they want the government to do all the controlling. And that's why we also have to keep young voters engaged and let them know that we hear them. They are a vocal, insistent, and progressive voting bloc. We saw how powerful their voices and their votes can be when they showed up in record numbers last year to not only pass abortion rights and strengthen voting rights laws, but they also helped put Democrats in control of the state legislature in four decades. And as we've witnessed, their votes played a strong part in passing some gun safety reforms, getting rid of that 1931 abortion ban, eliminating right to work for less, finally reinvesting into our educational system, and adding more LGBTQ+ protections into our state laws. However, as we've seen, we could use some more progressive voices and progressive muscle in the state legislature. Now, Democrats this past week were able to pass the Reproductive Health Act. However, it was a watered-down version of the bill. And it's all because of one Detroit Democrat, State Representative Karen Whitsett, who blocked some game-changing parts of the bill. Now, let's not forget that every Republican voted against the RHA. Every single Republican. That somehow always gets lost in these stories. I don't want anyone forgetting that. Not one Republican voted to help women. But Democrats held a slim majority in the House, and Whitsett's opposition to parts of the act meant they could only pass some parts of it. So the good news, as Anna Liz Nichols reports in Michigan Advance, the bills end the requirement of a separate insurance rider to pay for abortions, which critics call rape insurance, and the ban on what anti-abortion advocates call partial birth abortion, which is usually the dilation and extraction DNX procedures rarely used in late-term pregnancy. The amended bills also include the removal of some targeted regulations of abortion providers, commonly known as trap laws, such as a requirement that providers perform at a minimum of 120 abortions annually to meet up to the same licensing requirements as ambulatory surgical facilities. So that's some of the good news there, that they were able to get some of the trap laws, amongst other things. But the bad news of what didn't pass is a provision ending the 24-hour waiting period, which ends up costing women time, money, and resources to receive abortion care. That was the whole point of that 24-hour waiting period. Well, it's still there. Also, Karen Whitsett blocked a provision, a game-changing provision, in my opinion, which would have allowed abortions to be covered under Medicaid. That would have been huge for so many women out there in Michigan. But Whitsett lied as to why she opposed it, saying it would take money away from seniors, while never really offering any proof of that happening. Whitsett, you'll remember, visited Donald Trump at the White House back in 2020 to celebrate with him by her taking hydroxychloroquine when she had COVID, claiming that it really cured her when it didn't. So, you see, getting the majority in the House was a major, major step, but it's not enough. Oh, and yes, as you're seeing in the news, House Democrats will soon lose the majority as two of their own won respective races to become mayors. Kevin Coleman will soon become the mayor of Westland, and Lori Stone was victorious in her mayoral race in Warren, as she will now become that city's first female mayor. And you know what? I've got to think that many in Warren and throughout Michigan are just fine seeing Jim Fouts finally walk out the door after they passed a referendum for term limits in that city. So that's good. But that being said, I just have to say this. That being said, I'm still against term limits. I never have been for term limits, never will be. I'll never change my mind on that issue. Still, congratulations goes out to Kevin Coleman and Lori Stone on winning their races for mayor. That being said, this means Democrats and Republicans each have 54 seats in the state house, but it'll only be for a short time after special elections are held early next year, and Democrats are expected to win those seats. Still, we've seen how difficult it was for them to pass some key pieces of legislation, and they're still working on some, including government transparency and clean energy bills. That's why we need more progressives in the state house next year. I mean, I think with all of these state referendums and state legislature races happening across the country, all of us are seeing the importance of state and local governments. Change always happens faster on the local and state side of things compared to the national scene. That's just a fact. And while we'll be talking about President Biden and Donald Trump next year, trust me, the fight for the state house here in Michigan will be just as important, especially with Democrats keeping control of the state Senate and Governor Whitmer remaining in office through 2026. Plus, don't overlook those local races. I've been talking about the Fascist Moms for Liberty group, which has been busy trying to ban books in public schools, books primarily written by or about marginalized Americans. And thanks to posts by Ottawa County progressive activist and friend of the podcast, Joe Spaulding, and also by the Michigan Right to Read campaign, a millage to fund the Patmos Library in Jamestown Township passed. It passed after failing to do so the two previous times. Now, there was opposition to the library's millage those last two times due to some who were just upset that there were some books with LGBTQ plus themes. That caused the library to take time out and take some resources to put notes and labels inside books describing the themes or what their stories are about. I mean, librarians had to do that there at the Patmos Library. They were doing that just to see if they could assuage some of the opposition. But make no mistake, this was an effort by right-wing Christian nationalists to defund a library, but the people there fought back. And we're hearing of major victories across the country where parents won school board races against Moms for Liberty extremists. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. The national scene is important, no doubt. I'm not trying to sound blasé about national races. We need to win those races, too. They are important. But if we can win here in Michigan and show the rest of the country what is possible, then we can start to win some major victories when it comes to national politics. It's all about looking at the long game, everyone. You're listening to LOL.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
As of this recording, the Michigan Senate has passed a couple of bills as part of the Democrats' clean and affordable energy package. Now, there's some good in the bills that have passed, no doubt, but there are some parts that may not be as good. On next week's episode, Roshan Krishnan from the Michigan Environmental Justice Coalition will join me to further discuss these energy bills, and I can't wait for that. Also, in 2 weeks, reporter and author Anna Clark will come back on the podcast. Anna wrote the compelling book called The Poison City, Flint's Water, and the American Urban Tragedy. Anna's also a reporter for ProPublica, and she's written some stories about Michigan's emergency manager law and why many are hoping that Democrats will make some changes to that law, the law which led to the Flint water crisis. So I'm looking forward to speaking again with Anna Clark here in a few weeks. Now, I wanted to take some time out to talk about Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. As you know, I've talked a little bit about what's happening in the war in Gaza, but I haven't exactly brought up Congresswoman Tlaib yet. But before I do, I just want you to go back and listen to the last few episodes where I talk about this conflict and how I will always have the cynical viewpoint that violence is always inevitable whenever you have religious zealotry involved. I don't care which side, that's the truth. What Hamas did when it brutally murdered over 1,000 Israelis is not to be celebrated or erased just because it doesn't fit with your narrative of that region of the world. You can't ignore that. You have to condemn that. Hamas is a terrorist group, and murdering and kidnapping Israelis is never going to bring about a solution to this madness. However, because I'm a human being and do this stupid thing, which is called thinking, I cannot sit back and celebrate or ignore what the right-wing Benjamin Netanyahu administration is doing by killing thousands of Palestinians. He's always been bloodthirsty, and he's always wanted war against the Palestinian people. And I find it, I have to tell you, I find it abhorrent that so many Democrats and liberals are gladly attaching themselves to this morally corrupt right-winger who failed to not only protect his people from that Hamas attack, but is now trying to punish women and children in the name of revenge. And he will keep this war going as long as possible, so that way he stays in power. I'm also not hating on younger voters who oppose Netanyahu's administration over the bombings in Gaza. Perhaps they took their cue from the first United States president that they remember, Barack Obama, who had zero love for Netanyahu's war-making dreams. I mean, come on, let's not forget that Netanyahu's not only been pushing for war in Iran, but he pushed along with George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, and so many others in wanting a war with Iraq. We know that did not turn out too well. Anyway, here was former President Obama recently giving his take on the long-running conflict and truthfully and correctly using the term occupation when describing Israeli policy against Palestinians.
If there's any chance of us being able to act constructively to do something, it will require an admission of complexity and maintaining what on the surface may seem contradictory ideas. That what Hamas did was horrific and there's no justification for it. And what is also true is that the occupation and what's happening to Palestinians is unbearable. And what is also true is that there is a history of the Jewish people that may be dismissed unless your grandparents or your great-grandparents or your uncle or your aunt tell you stories about the madness of anti-Semitism. And what is true is that there are people right now who are dying who have nothing to do with what Hamas did. And what is true, right? I mean, we can go on for a while. And the problem with the social media and trying to TikTok activism and trying to debate this on that is you can't speak the truth. You can pretend to speak the truth. You can speak one side of the truth. And in some cases, you can try to maintain your moral innocence, but that won't solve the problem. And so if you want to solve the problem, then you have to take in the whole truth. And you then have to admit nobody's hands are clean, that all of us are complicit to some degree. I look at this and I think back, what could I have done during my presidency to move this forward as hard as I tried? I've got the scars to prove it. But there's a part of me that's still saying, well, was there something else I could have done? That's the conversation we should be having.
The former president there did a pretty good job at explaining the complexities of this whole situation. Complexities that I feel like we cannot discuss in today's political sphere or in social media. You're either on one side or the other. Let's not forget Netanyahu has tried to gut democracy in Israel so he can remain in power. And yet this is the guy. This is the guy some Democrats are putting their arms around. Which leads me to Congresswoman Tlaib. Congress this week censured Tlaib by 234-188 vote, with 22 Democrats joining with Republicans. 22 Democrats joined with Republicans. The same MAGA Republicans who covet and celebrate anti-Semitism on a daily basis and who practice Islamophobia on a daily basis as well. That's who these Democrats held hand-in-hand with to censure one of their own, and by the way, who is the only Palestinian-American in Congress. Not one Michigan Democrat, by the way, voted to censure, so that's good. This is the second time Republicans tried to censure Rashida Tlaib. The first one was brought by Georgia Republican nutjob Marjorie Taylor Greene, who once proclaimed that California wildfires were caused by Jewish space lasers. That's who you joined, Democrats. Those 22 Democrats, that's who you joined in censuring Rashida Tlaib, the Jewish space laser lady. But rather than being censured, Marge enjoys some big-time power within the MAGA Republican Party who celebrate her anti-Semitism. That censure was drafted because Tlaib joined in a peaceful protest outside the Capitol calling for a ceasefire. It didn't have enough legs to win the vote, but this second censure did. This one was brought by Georgia Republican Rich McCormick, which called on Tlaib's censure for, as McCormick said, according to Michigan Advance, calling for the destruction of the state of Israel and dangerously promoting false narratives regarding a brutal large-scale terrorist attack against civilian targets inside the sovereign territory of a major non-NATO ally while hundreds of Israeli and American hostages remain in terrorist captivity. And according to that same story, the resolution cited Tlaib's criticism of Israel the day after Hamas's initial attack, her dissemination of a later debunked report that Israeli rockets destroyed a hospital in the Gaza Strip, and a video last week that included the phrase, "from the river to the sea," which is widely seen as advocating for the dissolution of the state of Israel. Tlaib has called for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Hamas's attack has killed more than 1,400, mostly civilians. Israel's counteroffensive has killed more than 10,000 people, according to the Hamas-controlled Gaza Health Ministry. Most of the dead Palestinians were children, Tlaib said on Tuesday. Okay, so the censure resolution also criticized Rashida for using the apartheid term, which many have used, including yours truly. In a post on X, Tlaib said her usage of the phrase "from the river to the sea" was used as an inspirational call for freedom, human rights, and peaceful coexistence, not death and destruction or hate. My work and advocacy is always centered in justice and dignity for all people, no matter faith or ethnicity. So that's what she said. Now, I understand how the use of that phrase could anger some Jewish Americans, and some Michigan Democrats of the Jewish faith publicly criticized her. And the Anti-Defamation League also criticized Rashida's use of that phrase. I wouldn't have used that phrase knowing the hurt that it causes. But from my reading as well, though, the phrase "from the river to the sea," it has different meanings. Yes, it can mean one thing for a Jewish person and a different thing for a Palestinian person. There are many different ways that slogan, that phrase, is viewed. It's not necessarily a Hamas saying. It's a phrase that has been used for decades. But Republicans, though, wanted to make an example out of Rashida Tlaib, while others have made outlandish and downright racist remarks in Congress without ever being censured. For example, here's Republican Congressman Brian Mass from Florida, who said on the House floor the other day,
"As a whole, I would encourage the other side to not so lightly throw around the idea of innocent Palestinian civilians, as is frequently said. I don't think we would so lightly throw around the term innocent Nazi civilians during World War II.
There are no innocent Palestinian civilians. That's what Brian Mass said, yet no censure for him. Republicans are attacking Tlaib because she's critical of the Israeli right-wing government. She's calling for a ceasefire, which is what a majority of Democratic voters want Democrats doing. Polls have shown that. It's sad to read comments from Democrats and liberals who attack Rashida. She's been a strong, progressive ally who fights for social and environmental justice. She fights for union rights, for gun safety reforms. She fights for these gun safety reforms to help keep kids alive in our schools. And she represents her Detroit district to the fullest. And yet there are some who want her gone or who want her voice silenced. Well, I won't join in that fight if you don't mind. Denzel McCampbell, Managing Director for Progress Michigan, released a statement this week saying, "As a Detroiter, a Michigander, and a Palestinian-American, Rashida has brought the voices of marginalized communities into the halls of Congress day in and day out. We oppose efforts including and especially censuring to silence her needed voice, especially during these times." Rashida has never once wavered on speaking up for progressive issues, even if they weren't the most popular. She has always had the backs of Michiganders, and it is time for us to have her back. We join Rashida in uplifting and fighting for peace and justice for all, no matter if they live in Detroit, Southfield, Dearborn, Israel, or Palestine. I have to agree with those words. I'll finish this segment with Congresswoman Tlaib making her statement on the House floor before the vote to censure her took place.
I'm the only Palestinian American serving in Congress, Mr. Chair, and my perspective is needed here now more than ever. I will not be silenced, and I will not let you distort my words. Folks forget I'm from the city of Detroit, the most beautiful, blackest city in the country, where I learned to speak truth to power even if my voice shakes. Trying to bully or censor me won't work, because this movement for a ceasefire is much bigger than one person. It's growing every single day. There are millions of people across our country who oppose Netanyahu's extremism and are done watching our government support collective punishment and the use of white phosphorus bombs that melt flesh to the bone. They are done watching our government, Mr. Chair, supporting cutting off food, water, electricity, and medical care to millions of people with nowhere to go. Like me, Mr. Chair, they don't believe the answer to war crimes is more war crimes. The refusal of Congress and the administration to acknowledge Palestinian lives is chipping away at my soul. Over 10,000 Palestinians have been killed. Majority were children. But let me be clear. My criticism has always been of the Israeli government and Netanyahu's actions. It is important to separate people and governments, Mr. Chair. No government is beyond criticism. The idea that criticizing the government of Israel is anti-Semitic sets a very dangerous precedent, and it's being used to silence diverse voices speaking up for human rights across our nation. Do you realize what it's like, Mr. Chair, for the people outside the chamber right now, listening in agony to their own government dehumanizing them? To hear the President of the United States, "We helped elect," dispute death tolls as we see video after video of dead children and parents under rubble. Mr. Chair, do you know what it's like to fear rising hate crimes, to know how Islamophobia and anti-Semitism makes us all less safe, and worry that your own child might suffer the horrors that six-year-old Wadia did in Illinois? I can't believe I have to say this, but Palestinian people are not disposable. We are human beings, just like anyone else. My Sitti, my grandmother, like all Palestinians, just wants to live her life with freedom and human dignity we all deserve. Speaking up to save lives, Mr. Chair, no matter faith, no matter ethnicity, should not be controversial in this chamber. The cries of the Palestinian and Palestinian and Israeli children sound no different to me. What I don't understand is why the cries of Palestinians sound different to you all.
To all the 22 House Democrats who joined with the MAGA Republican crowd in censuring Rashida Tlaib, I'm sure you went to bed last night, and I'm sure you were very, very proud. Because you got to stand with Marjorie Taylor Greene. You got to stand with Lauren Boebert. You got to stand with MAGA Republicans. Congratulations. You've all done a mighty fine day's work now, haven't you?
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Hey, I quickly like to give a shout out to my good friend Rich for all of his work on leftoflansing.com. Please subscribe when you have a chance. That's where you can get an archive of all of my episodes, plus the Monday Musings and the Friday Left of Lansing shorts are there as well. And I put other scribblings there too. So Rich, thanks again for all of your work. Time now for a Left of Lansing last call. I'll always give it to you fair here on this podcast. You know that. I'm a progressive and will always call and fight for strong progressive legislation. And when I feel like Democrats are falling short, hey, I'll call them out on it. But this week, I'd like to congratulate them on doing the right thing, a right thing which should have been done a long time ago. As the Democrats are hurrying to get some key bills passed before having to go on recess for the rest of the year, they're sending a bill to Governor Whitmer's desk which will help Michiganders who were wronged by pharmaceutical companies. According to Beth LeBlanc from the Detroit News, the Michigan Senate voted in bipartisan fashion to gut a state law which provided protection to drug makers or sellers from lawsuits over their products. That's true. That law gave immunity to drug makers since its inception some 28 years ago during the Republican John Engler administration. Yet another Republican disaster. Bills to erase that law passed the House a few times through the years, only to meet their demise in the dead-end state Senate. Well, no more. The Detroit News story says the immunity provisions blocked 2001 litigation against American Home Products Corporation, the maker of diet drug Fen-Phen, later litigation against Merck, the maker of anti-arthritis drug Vioxx, and more recent legislation related to the opioid epidemic, according to an analysis by the nonpartisan Senate Fiscal Agency. This is good. This is good. Now, the right-wing Michigan Chamber of Commerce was against the bill, which is good enough for me to say it's great to see this law die. And it's funny because the same people who claim that there's some mass conspiracy between Big Pharma and the government when it comes to COVID vaccines are noticeably silent when it comes to granting Big Pharma immunity from lawsuits. Look, I know some Republicans joined in nullifying this disastrous law, and that's a good thing. But again, it took the Democratic majority to get it over the finish line. This is another example where we are putting people over profits.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
That'll do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Please, if you don't mind, give this podcast a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcast. And I have to tell you, I'm a little sad because all the Oktoberfest beers seem to be gone from the store shelves. Stores look like they're moving on to their holiday brews. Now, is there a good holiday beer from a Michigan brewery that I should try out? Let me know at leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'm all ears. Next week, I'll speak with Roshan Krishnan from the Michigan Environmental Justice Coalition, and I'm looking forward to that discussion. Until next time, go Lions, beat them Chargers, and remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.